Touchstone Pictures presents...
Here's how a harem girl dances. Okay, well, thank you for that. Whatever that was.
The motion picture that's so big...
Say what?
So charming...
I'm at my wit's end, I can't take it!
So manly... It's sure to be a classic for all generations.
Perhaps. You've been like the drunken, abusive grandfather I never had.
Cabin Boy.
They'll come in.
It's the story of a boy and his love affair with the sea.
This moron got on the wrong boat.
Now he's getting a taste of the sailor's life.
Is it true it's unsafe to drink seawater?
That's a new one to me.
It's the most amazing journey ever.
Okay, moron, you go stand in the bow and let us know when we're coming close to ice.
Okay, you hit one.
He never dreamed where the winds of fortune would blow him. Where the spirit of adventure would hurl him. Or where the hands of fate...
Come on over here, honey.
...would grab him.
These pipes are clean!
Touchstone Pictures presents...
What happened to you?
Well, let's just say I've finally shed my feminine side.
Chris Elliott.
So this is what you guys do for fun? Humiliate an imbecile?
Cabin Boy.
You couldn't be cuter. Hey, would you like to buy a monkey?
Hello, welcome to Movie Humpers. My name, Bob Sham.
My name, Angela.
The sounds you hear may be dogs, and we discuss movies a lot, at least a few times a week. And this month's theme, we're in a whole new month, whole new theme, April.
Mm-hmm.
You know, April Fools. So on April Fools, it was the one time this month that we didn't watch like a pure comedy. That's our April Fool on you. But we are examining some comedies in our theme we're calling Awkward Laughter to the Flop. And we're examining some comedies that came out in our lifetime that did not do very well at the box office. And we're re-examining them again decades later after all these years. We talked about Ishtar yesterday as of this drop.
Mm-hmm.
And we like Ishtar. We like that movie.
Yep.
And now we come up on another one that involves players that are personally influential to, you know, the sense of humor I grew up with.
Absolutely.
And this movie is actually quite influential in the sense that, well, we're talking about the movie Cabin Boy from 1994, directed by Adam Resnick. It's written by Chris Elliott and Adam Resnick, and it stars Chris Elliott. Chris Elliott, he's actually a very funny guy.
And he's still so relevant
to modern comedic sensibilities. I mean, Chris Elliott and Adam Resnick, they wrote for Letterman.
Yeah.
And they had a show, a short-lived show on Fox called Get a Life.
Yeah.
That Chris Elliott and Adam Resnick created together.
I remember it being on.
It was one of those shows that was one of those short-lived but critically acclaimed shows. One of those shows that the people who watched it were very inspired, but no one else really watched it, and it didn't make it. Kind of like your Freaks and Geeks or your Ben Stiller show.
The Dana Carvey.
Dana Carvey show, stuff like that. And, you know, Chris Elliott and Adam Resnick, their work with David Letterman, it's, you know, similar to, like, David Letterman stuff influenced, like, Conan stuff. That early Conan O'Brien late night was very influential to
yes.
me. Stuff like Kids in the Hall. All that became,
absolutely.
Like, this precursor to stuff that would come later, like Adult Swim, like weird, absurdist fucking comedies. And you see the building blocks here. But what happened with this movie and how this movie kind of got made, and I actually found like a panel discussion hosted by Tom Sharpling where they did a 25th anniversary screening of it. And I haven't watched it yet. It was from 2019. And I'll go back and watch it sometime.
I would like to
But apparently, yeah, when, I mean, I think they're Resnick is friends with Tom Sharpling, so but a lot of time these guys, when confronted with this movie, they're a little bit like they kind of go with the consensus of failure. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we should point out, like, you know, sometimes I encounter other people. I mean, there's no shortage of people reviewing movies on YouTube, but I find that, like, sometimes there's people that'll be like, you know, making movies is hard, and it is,
mm-hmm.
and it's very challenging, and it's hard, and it is hard for, you'd think some people might go on to be great movie stars, it doesn't work out. We see it all the time. There is something about that business that is so challenging.
Yeah.
But I still want to be honest in how I feel when, you know, we watching these movies. But sometimes you get these reviewers that try to be very soft.
They're trying to make excuses.
And we're not going to be hard on this movie.
No, but at the same time, you're not going to, like, why should they get more credit for trying to make a movie than someone else who does that really successfully?
Sure. Chris Elliott and Adam Resnick kind of are consigned to the criticisms of the movie, and their experience making it, while, you know, even though they got to be with their friends, maybe was, it just presented a lot of challenges, I suppose.
Sure.
Yeah, that is interesting. I would say there was not one good day on the it was all about you and I, like, what the fuck did we just do today? And we didn't know.
No, we would go home. I would go back to the hotel, and I had a bad back. I had had back surgery, so I was, like, you know, in pain most of the day. But I can remember, like, you know, usually when you're doing a comedy, you know, at least the crew laughs a little bit. Yeah. And I just remember people just like frowning and chilling.
Yeah, we were kind
checking
of
their equipment. Yeah. And just like, you know.
One of the co-producers in this movie, Tim Burton, was set to make this movie. I don't know how deep the agreement was. This seemed maybe like a word of mouth that just didn't work out. Well, Tim Burton, he had seen Get a Life, and he contacted Chris Elliott and Adam Resnick, and he wanted to see about making a movie that they wrote. So they wrote this movie with the idea that Tim Burton would be directing this movie, which kind of makes sense when you're watching it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tim Burton backed out of the project, stayed on as a producer. He went on to make Ed Wood, one of his best movies.
One of my favorite of all time.
Adam Resnick got talked into directing the movie. I think this is the only feature film he ever directed. And like in the spirit of Charles Lofton from The Night of the Hunter, Adam Resnick was like, I'm not doing this ever again.
It's also, it's a lot. Like, this movie has a lot going on. This is very intense to be a directorial debut.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's one thing to write it and plan to hand it to someone who has been doing this, knows what they're doing, and you trust to take your vision to life. But when you all of a sudden have to do it, and listen, I'm not making excuses for him, like I said, but like,
well, this is his first movie.
This is a lot to be a first movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's hard to think of it that way because of the players involved.
Yeah.
Because of, yeah, just how big it is and how good it could have been, maybe.
This movie's not without laughs, but
yeah.
After watching it, I kind of get why people didn't take to it at the time. It does have a cult appreciation. There are, yeah. It does have cultural influence out there. Mm-hmm. But I think it's, you know, it kind of, it's a part of like this greater comedic culture of the time that kind of contributes to what's going on today.
Ricky Lake plays the woman on the front of the boat.
Yeah.
And that's, I love that. I love the little bits that feel almost like Monty Python when the clouds are blowing.
Right.
Wind. That, like, there's these things that are cool looking.
It was written to be a Tim Burton movie.
Yeah.
So the clouds make sense in that regard, and you get like weird ice monsters and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if like, there's some moments that just look fun and are fun, and other moments like the stop motion ice monster. Like, I love stop motion. But that whole scene was, like, weird as shit.
It was weird.
We also added in these creatures because we thought, well, that's what Tim Burton likes.
We were making it for Tim. This is the thing. We thought he was our ticket to things beyond Cabin Boy. So it was all about what he wanted and what we thought he would like.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think we would have. We certainly would not put in, you know, Sharky and Chalky and Callie and
which I think when Tim saw that was probably thinking, what the fuck is this? We were totally wrong. This is our version of what we thought Tim would like.
Yeah. You
know? Our lead, Chris, as played by Chris Elliott, Nathaniel Mayweather, he's a snotty little rich boy.
Fancy boy.
Who's a little snob, and he talks down to everyone, and he thinks he's above everyone. So immediately you're like, oh, he's going to, this is going to be a journey to where he's going to learn to be a man, a different kind of man, more of a man of the people that you hope. Mm-hmm. And I guess that is the journey, but yeah. It just kind of stumbles its way there in a way that I don't know if actually like it makes a lot of sense. But he's told he has to board this, the Mary Catherine or the Queen Catherine. And a cow is blocking a sign as he's on his way to the docks, and he goes to a different dock where he boards a fishing ship called the Filthy Whore. At this point in the movie, the Nathaniel Mayweather character, he's not stupid. He's naive because of his extreme privilege. He gets on this boat and he thinks it's some kind of like themed boat or something.
He makes a comment when he's walking. The reason he's walking is because he's such an asshole that the driver who's supposed to take him to the Queen Catherine kicks him out of the car. And it's like, I'm not fucking taking this from you. So he basically says him walking down this dirt road is the first time he's ever broken a sweat in his life. He's never.
Dear Lord, I'm about to embark on a brisk walk. The first bit of exercise in my young privileged life. I pray, do not allow me to break a sweat.
He prayed to not sweat, which is funny.
He's never exercised.
When he walks into this like little dock town, this is a fairly infamous scene.
Yeah.
In which he encounters a derelict played by David Letterman. And I'm very aware of this scene. David Letterman literally spent the rest of his late night career like quoting his own line from this movie like it was a big joke. Like, it became like a big joke when he hosted the Oscars the following year about how like terrible this movie was. It was something he brought up over and over again. And Chris Elliott and Adam Resnick, they wrote for Letterman like they're friends, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, he would just kind of like make fun of the fact that he was in this movie. And the interchange here feels like the best interchange dialogue in the movie.
I have been wandering this dreary village in hopes of finding the Queen Catherine. You wouldn't have any idea where she might be docked, would you?
You know what you are? You're one of those little fancy lads, aren't you? Boy, you're cute. Okay. Gosh, what a sweet little outfit. Is it your little spring outfit? No. You couldn't be cuter.
I wish that he'd been one of the guys on the boat. Like, I wish he'd been there more because the interaction between the two of them, his character is very memorable, even though it's a very short scene.
Yeah, but it's a very memorable scene. Yeah. And is it great? Because I think the dialogue, the interchange here with these characters is the best between two characters in the movie. But I'm also just very hyper aware of this specific scene and him saying,
hey, would you like to buy a monkey?
No, I don't want to buy a monkey.
Are you sure?
No.
I do think it stands up on its own.
So he ends up on this fishing ship and he's sleeping in the captain quarters thinking it's like some themed ship. And of course he finds himself a part of this boat crew as they're well out to sea and they're going to be gone for a long time. And Andy Richter,
baby Andy Richter,
who is plays maybe one of the dumbest characters you will ever see in a movie, is he just gets talked into letting him on the ship. And he is painfully stupid. And he wants him to go to Hawaii. It's so it's like we're in this kind of world that is just kind of like a vague representation of our own world. Like, it seems like it's in the past and the present at the same time. And so Andy Richter, he starts moving the wheel because he supposedly knows how to get there, but it's taken him to this area
called
Hell's Bucket.
Hell's Bucket.
It's kind of like the Bermuda Triangle where weird shit happens when you go there.
But also, on the way to Hell's Bucket, the reason they know they're in Hell's Bucket is because this huge storm happens and Andy Richter gets knocked off the boat and drowns.
Yeah.
So fast, Freebark. I hope he enjoys Hawaii. Gotta remind him that we're almost out of margarine. Oh, come back. You can't do this to me. Come back.
So they're going through Hell's Bucket and the ship gets wrecked and they're all mad at Chris. Oh, this crew is, and there's a lot of people in here. It's Chris Elliott, Rich Brinkley plays the captain. Melora Walters, we see her later. Andy Richter, Brian Doyle Murray, James Gammon, Brian James. They're all in the crew.
It's just a crew of character actors.
And of course, he's this Ponzi boy who gets like picked on by them all the time. And since Andy Richter is dead,
he has to do his job.
Be the cabin boy. Mm-hmm. His naivety is steeped in his snottiness. He's a very educated guy, but he doesn't know much about the world because he's ultra privileged. Somewhere along the way, and you could say it's after this point, but he kind of does because they stick him on this little boat.
Little raft, yeah.
This little raft, and they're going to tail him by a rope. He's going to be like a mile out, and they're going to like, we're going to leave him out there for like...
A whole week.
A whole week. And he's going along with it like, oh, yeah, okay.
Sounds a trifle peculiar, but I suppose you're the experts. Hey, one more thing. Is it true it's unsafe to drink seawater?
That's a new one to me.
Water, ain't it?
We gave you a carton of chocolate milk. What else you want?
He goes from a spoiled little naive fancy boy to just a fucking idiot.
Yes.
And you think it happens after he's like been under extreme exposure for 9 days, but it actually appears to happen right before when he just has no idea, like, oh, this is what we do. And he spends like 9 days out there and he falls into the water, and this half shark, half man, who's played by Russ Tamblyn, his name is Chalky, he rescues him.
He doesn't say a word.
Yeah, he never says anything in the whole movie, and he lifts him up, and so he rings the bell to be pulled in, he comes in, and at this point, he is not like the spoiled boy anymore. He's just a fucking idiot.
What's relaxing up here? Staring off into the night sky, those sparkly, twinkly things? I forget their technical name.
Stars.
Whatever.
Halfway through, it just goes into like this idiotic fallback. We know he's going to go into a journey out of spoiledness,
yeah.
But it's just gone.
He doesn't learn a lesson to let go of it.
Well, it doesn't even have to be like a lesson. He figures things out. He's going to do things. But I'm saying it just goes from zero to I'm just an idiot.
No, sure. I guess I was expecting some sort of like self-realization. You know, like, I'm being an asshole. Like, I need to not be an asshole anymore.
Right, we don't get that.
But we don't get that ever. You're right, he's just a dumb kid.
He just goes from naive, spoiled prick to just an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird. And, like, Chris Elliott can do that. Now he's just a guy on a boat. Like, it doesn't seem to matter. He's a young guy. He's representing a young guy who hasn't reached certain aspects of manhood. That was the whole point of his father sending him off in the first place. He's just like a blank slate all of a sudden.
Yeah, and then when he's come back and he's in that state is when he sees a woman floating in the water by the boat, Trina.
Right.
And he thinks she needs rescuing.
It's played by Melora Walters, but apparently she was just going for the world record swimming from Maryland to Maryland.
Yeah, all the way around the world.
Which I think you could probably break the swimming record and not have to go that far.
I have thought more about her character than even makes sense, but she didn't have almost anything with her. She had a journal. She didn't have food.
Which they burned.
She was sleeping. She was in the middle of Hell's Bucket. Truly,
she was just there.
She should have been wearing a wetsuit. No, she's wearing a one piece. Like, at least it wasn't a fucking bikini. But it was not practical. I'm swimming across the world.
Okay.
Chloe, this is what I'm saying. I don't know why I've gone this deep on her, but I truly am like, this makes no sense in a movie that makes no sense.
I mean, if we're going to split hairs on pragmatism in this movie, this will be like a 5-hour long episode.
She tells him a story at one point too about how she's been on her own since she was 9 and she was working in mines, I think.
She worked in a steel mill.
Steel mill, that's what it is. And then steel mill, and then she was swimming in all her free time.
Yeah.
So she doesn't have time for a relationship, but he is in love with her because he's never
She's the girl and he's never
seen a girl
had
before.
Sex.
He's never had sex. Yeah.
Also, the crew explained that Chalky is a half man, half shark. A Viking slept with a female shark and Chalky was born.
Brian Doyle Murray is the guy who knows all the lore. So every time they run into something, they're like, get over here and tell us what the fuck this is. Like, what's going on with this next thing?
Well, the crew have this plan to dump Nathaniel onto this island once they get there because their boat's drawing water. Mm-hmm. And this boat is drawing water for like, they say the boat's drawing water, and then you can track like that it was 9 days since they said that when they stuck him out on a raft.
And, yeah.
Well, they finally do make their way to the island after fighting an ice monster, mm-hmm. which looked okay. It was goofy, but maybe not that funny.
Mm-hmm.
But they end up on this island, and where we get the climax of what's going on. And it's the climax of this movie actually is very funny to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because they tell him, like, oh, you need to get your pipes cleaned if you want to, like, be cool around women. So you can go up to this cave and go meet this mythical lady. But everything that they try to say to get rid of him ends up being something that's kind of true.
Mm-hmm.
So he literally does go through the forest of this island, up a mountain, into this hole. And there's this lady who's like...
It's like a whole little house in there.
Like the goddess Shiva or something. Yeah,
she's got six arms.
And he ends up like getting his pipes cleaned by Shiva. So he loses his virginity. And then when he leaves to go find the lady who swims, Trina.
And then he goes and finds Trina and they fuck.
Yeah, if Trina is drawn to him because he has confidence. He seems like he's a man now.
He's a man.
Oh, we do see Andy Richter kind of come back to kind of cheer him on, but he's dressed,
delirious on the raft.
But he's like, it's like he's the angel guy from Grease. Like he's just all dressed up and he seems smarter.
Just wanted to stop by and say, hang in there. You're doing a hell of a job.
Very kind of you, Kenny.
Well, keep up the good work. Bonsoir.
The mythical creature lady that Nathaniel slept with has a husband who sells...
I sold one electric toothbrush to a flying leprechaun.
Well, don't be discouraged, dear. I'm sure things will pick up once word of mouth gets out.
Who am I kidding? It's a stupid idea to open up a houseware store on this island. I might as well just go back to devouring wild boar and sleeping on a beach all day.
Stop talking like that.
But he realizes he finds, like, his wallet that has, like, dried fish and his ID in it. So he knows... And he's, like, dressed like a working-class salesman, but he's a giant.
Yeah, but so he knows Nathaniel is there, and he tells his little wife, because she's tiny.
Yeah.
Compared to him... You know, you told me that when we got married, you wouldn't help out sailors anymore. And she's like, I get bored up here.
So he knows that she slept with some fisherman. And so he goes out and he walks by Trina and Nathaniel. And they notice that the fishermen have abandoned them. But they're not too far out. So the giant thinks that the fishermen are the ones that she slept with. So he starts walking in the water towards the boat.
He's like waist deep in the sea.
But so Nathaniel heroically is going to rescue his shipmates, even though Trina's like, they tried to abandon you to get out to where the giant is, because Trina is a great swimmer. He holds a rope and he's riding her back while she's... This is fucking hilarious.
It's hilarious.
Actually, this whole like 15-20 minute chunk
the best part.
Is genuinely like the funniest part of the movie next to the Letterman bit. So yeah, they end up fighting off the giant and the fishermen help to save their own ass. They kill the giant. They strangle him with his own belt.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, and Chalky comes out and helps.
It's Chalky!
And Chalky comes out and helps fight the giant. It's insane, but it actually is quite entertaining.
It's really good. And then cut to, they're in Hawaii.
Yeah,
they made it.
They go to Hawaii and he goes to say his goodbyes.
Because his dad has a big hotel there that he's supposed to now work at and be a rich boy.
And everyone's going to, the fishermen are going to go be fishermen. Trina's going to go back into swimming. And he goes and talks to his father. And
his father's a prick.
And he realizes that, no, he's just not a fancy boy anymore. His time is over. So he meets with Trina and he's like, why don't we just go? And we belong out to sea with our fisherman friends. So he rides Trina like a trained whale out to the boat. And that's how the movie ends. Yeah. Cabin boy.
Cabin boy.
Cabin
is now
boy.
A cabin man.
He's a cabin man. If only they made a sequel called Cabin Man.
Tim Burton was not producing that one.
This movie cost $10 million, made $3.7 million at the box office. Yeah, it's not without laughs, but I feel like it was an awkward journey to get to what felt like the most consistent laughs. There's some scenes where you're watching is like, man, they could have maybe redid that.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie actually is weirdly inspired for, like I said, like a lot of weird modern comic sensibilities. Especially ones in the 2000s in which we were high and drunk late at night watching late night Cartoon Network, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is definitely right at home with that kind of stuff. And now I feel like you see that humor everywhere, like in commercials and stuff like that. In some ways, this movie was ahead of its time.
Absolutely.
But as far as like a really well-executed movie, I wouldn't say that at
no,
all.
No, I wouldn't say well-executed. I wouldn't even say it's a good movie, but it is such a fun movie.
So we're going to give this 1 through 5. You're going to give it 1 through 5. I'm going to give it 1 through 5 combined for best out of 10. What do you score the movie Cabin Boy?
I think I'm going to give it a 2.25.
You know, I'm going to give it a 3. I'm going to give it a 3, so that makes it a 5.25.
Okay.
So take a look at it. It's in a rare company here with the Philip Marlowe first-person experimental movie Lady in the Lake.
Right.
The Brides of Dracula and the Lacey Chabert Hallmark movie The Sweetest Christmas. Cabin Boy is at least as good as those, if not better. Some might go higher. I think our score is actually a little higher than the average cumulative score. I think it actually goes under a 5.
Mm-hmm.
But we think it's just slightly above, right down the middle. Looking back and judging these movies is that it's maybe rated about right, right?
Yeah.
It's got some fun stuff, but it's certainly could have been better in a lot of parts. So check the show notes for links, other places to find us. Like and subscribe. Leave a comment, correction. I could imagine there's a lot of Cabin Boy defenders.
Mm-hmm.
Write your essay under here. I'm not going to argue against anybody, whether they love it or not, but I would love to hear your takes on it and what this movie means to you. Mm-hmm. I think I would always be open to that. Any fun facts or whatever you got. And yeah, so let's get out of here.
Justice for Ishtar.